Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Drunk Women are live and unleashed on the 29th of May and the 4th of July at the Pleasance Theatre in London. Announced guests are Lizzie Roper, Ulrika Johnson, Rebecca Root and Jade Adams. Go to pleasance.co.uk for tickets. And the Drunk Women will be downing Prosecco at this year's Edinburgh Fringe. You can see them from the 3rd to the 11th of August inclusive, 7:20pm at the Underbelly, Bristow Square. Tickets are now on sale at Underbelly. Edinburgh.co.uk.
Drunk women solving crime.
Drunk women.
Drunk women solving crime.
Drunk women.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
This is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Katie Wilkins and I'm an author and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
And writer-comedian Taylor Glenn.
Hello.
This is where brandy meets bludgeoning, mimosa meets misdemeanor, and port meets prostitution. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
She invented the knighthood, Margaret Knight. She invented the concept of knight. She invented deadly nightshade.
I mean, do you know what? I cannot disprove that.
She invented a nightlight.
Let me just get you up to speed with bound paper bags, motherfuckers.
We can't masturbate with that. Can we?
It's good if you're having like a kind of like panic attack. It's great to masturbate with.
You can keep wanking.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
We are joined today by the fantastic comedian, screenwriter, host of the Guilty Feminist podcast. It's Deborah Frances White.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. And can I say, when I turned up tonight, I was buzzing on the flat door. Is it okay to say this? We're in a flat? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do people know that? Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give the address away because you'll be stalked. No, but I was buzzing on the flat door. No one was there. And I thought, oh. And then this handsome man came up behind me and said, are you looking for drunk women? And the tip off might have been that I was holding a bottle of vodka. And I said, do you know I am looking for drunk women? And that's not the first time I've been asked that. And the answer is always a yes. And then he said, I'm married to somebody.
He just said somebody.
He said, I'm married to somebody famous from Drunk Women Solving Crime. And
well, one of us is married to Richard Herring. The other one is not married, so it's definitely Taylor.
And he said, he didn't say that. He just said, I'm married to one of the drunk women. And
I thought so.
Specify. I thought, it could be a Mormon big love thing going on.
Keeping his options open.
Yeah. Any Mormons listening, please don't be offended. I know that you are not poly... not amorous. It's polygamous. Monogamous.
Polygamous. Oh, Jesus, I know polygamous. This word.
Look, well, I say I've polygamous. Offended Mormons by saying, I'm implying they're polygamous. You've offended them more by saying Jesus. So, so I used to be a Jehovah's Witness, so I can make these niche religion jokes.
Oh, I like it.
And
my sister wives really enjoy this.
He said, no, I'm married.
I think they'd have no idea what polygamous is, because we're like, polygamous, centrifugal, let's do this.
Good litmus test, can we say polygamous?
We can't.
Polygamous.
Polygamous. Oh, man. Anyway, I'm down with that if you guys are.
Polygamous. It's not poly. It's polygamous.
Polygamous.
Polygamy. Polygamous. I just realised what the word is.
I know the word.
Now, listen.
God, it's like I'm not even here.
How many husbands do you have right now?
Listeners, I need you to know that when they say it's drunk women solving crime, they serve you some serious cocktails.
Yeah.
Serious. Now, on the Guilty Feminist, you'll know me as cogent and articulate. No, my friends, because I now think the word is polygamous, because I have had a number of Taylor's muddled vojitos.
Oh. Yes.
Now, the reason they're vojitos is I brought vodka because I thought, you know, be polite. And I brought very icy vodka, but I didn't bring any mixers. And so Taylor then went and created in her kitchen a vodka mojito, which I christened wittily. After two of them. So it might not be as witty in the morning. Who's to say? It's anybody's game. I christened them a vojito. And I think, could you, Taylor, please tell the listeners, what is in a vojito?
It's a few parts. I don't have the exact ratios. So I had some, I didn't know that mint would grow like crazy if you plant it. It just grows. It's like a weed. It's crazy. It's a delicious weed. So it's a whole lot of mint. I use 2 limes per drink.
Oh my God.
So you treat it like a mojito. I put a little golden caster sugar in there and then 2 double shots of vodka and just shook them up with some ice and serve it straight like a martini.
She used a muddle.
I muddled it.
Also, earlier, Taylor was like bragging to us that she had golden caster sugar because she genuinely thought it was like this English really thing. Fancy. Yeah.
You have golden. Made a delicious minty vojito, and I recommend that all the listeners, before, just pause the podcast now, go and muddle yourself a long cold vojito.
Go and muddle yourself.
And the trick is, the vodka should be in the freezer.
Yes.
Now, you haven't had time to put it in there, so this is going to be awful for you. But get a little bit of ice. Make yourself a long cold drunk women solving crime trademark vojito.
Yes. Yeah, baby.
And
cheers.
Join in the crime solving inebriated fun.
I mean, a lot of people listen to this on their way to work, and I've got to say, just do it. Like, that's
you
fine.
Know they take a hip bag.
Flask. They take a hip flask.
Okay, we're going to have to get cracking. Deborah, can you tell us, have you ever been the victim of a crime?
You know I have. crime number one. They're all related. Crime number one. When I was a student in Oxford, uh-huh. I had a little cottage in a part of a student accommodation.
Ooh.
Went away for a long weekend, came back, burgled.
Oh.
Literally footprints on the bed, like an Agatha Christie crime scene.
On the bed. Like a cartoon robbery.
Oh, cartoon robbery. But here's the kicker.
Oh.
The criminals had the burglars, if you will.
Yeah.
Shouldn't call them criminals. It's stereotyping them. And the burglars, if you will, had got out the chess set. And played a game of chess.
Fuck off. Fucking Oxford.
Fucking Oxford. It's such an Oxford crime.
Oh, wow.
Even the burglars will have a quick game of chess.
True story.
Yeah. Crime number two.
Okay.
Just after I left
Why
Oxford.
Why did they walk on the bed? Oh, is that where they played chess?
I think, no, the chess set was downstairs in the living room.
It was just
room.
Part of the, we're not allowed on here.
I think it was more like being quick. But there was like muddy footprints on the bed, like just jumping over the bed, grabbing a, I suppose,
I don't know.
A rook. And then, oh, we've got time for chess, actually, now that we've saved all that time jumping on the bed.
Fascinating, though. Fascinating. We were just like, the police were like, I think they said they might have been looking for something in the chess set. Like, sometimes people keep things in there.
Just like how posh do you have to be to keep, like, your best jewellery? Pop it in the chess set.
Well, I did have a tiara in there, darling. I did not, just to be clear. Crime number two. I've just graduated from Oxford. I live in a friend's basement in Camden. Mm-hmm. They don't force me. I live there willingly.
And it's not the crime.
It's a long weekend. It's a picture, if you will, a bank holiday weekend in May. It's Saturday morning. It's 5 a.m. I'm intending to go away with my partner. But I wake up. I think, oh, I fancy a drink of water. I reach for my bedside table. And as my eyes are adjusting to the early morning light, I see crouched down in the corner of the room a man.
Oh my God!
Who is staring at me. And he just freezes, and I freeze, and he freezes, and I freeze. And then I say, Tom, there's a man in the room. Now, Tom and I are not wearing much, and we're on a low futon bed because I've just left uni and we're still in the student phase. And Tom was like, wow, and wakes up. And the man, in a James Earl Jones voice, says, "Stay there!"
Oh, my God.
And he stands up, and he's got a silver box that could be a camera case, but in fact has my makeup in it.
Oh.
It's a silver, like, cosmetics case.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I say, there's only makeup in that. Because, honestly, the TV is insured.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The phone's insured, but makeup, it takes so long
to collect that.
It's so valuable to me, and he is only going to dump it in a bin.
Yeah.
Because that particular shade of Estee Lauder foundation, which can no longer be got for love nor money, is worthless to him.
Yeah.
But it's got a plus, it's an SPF 30 plus. And you just can't walk into any shop. And it's expensive. You know, I was literally just graduated from uni, and it's really expensive, and I've saved up for that. And I'm just like,
you make that foundation last for like 7 years.
100%. Yeah. And I'm like, take what you want, leave the makeup. It's valueless to you.
Yeah.
But I will stand between you and the liquid eyeliner. I've got three on the go in there, and they're all half used.
Yes.
And I noticed you're wearing none. So leave my premises with anything you want, including my childhood photographs, but back the fuck off the lipstick queen. They don't do that shade anymore. Anyway, he drops the makeup.
Wow. Ooh.
And walks out. And for some reasons, you know how you normally have your mobile phone plugged in by the bed?
Yeah.
But for some reason, we'd left our mobiles in the living room.
Right.
And it was like, because it was a basement, it was like a Japanese screen. Okay. I mean, it was a proper wall, but it was sort of like, it was styled on a Japanese screen. So it was a perspex, so you could sort of see through the wall.
Okay.
And we could see him cutting the cords to the television and the DVD player, because those were the days when we had a DVD player. And the sparks were flying, and apparently burglars do that because it's quicker to cut the cords and they can reconnect the cords, but it's harder
to
unplug.
Oh my God, to find all the plugs.
Well, you don't want to ravel up all the spaghetti.
I did not know that.
Yeah, you can reconnect, but
this is a funny image of like wrapping it around.
So he's cutting the cords and we can see all the sparks, and he went, and then Tom went out, and we were like so disconcerted. It was like 5 a.m. So he went out, got the phone, came back in, called the police, and the guy came back and was moving. It was like he was moving out. He was doing trips to the car.
How did he get into your flat?
There was a basement, and it was a big window, and he'd pulled it up, and it was locked, but he was with one of those sort of, like, you know, little things.
Right. I'm efficient enough that I'm going to cut the cables to the TV because it takes too long, but I will go to my car and come back because there's still room in there.
And so at this point, Tom's on the phone to the police, and he says he's back. The police get there, I reckon, 30 seconds after he leaves.
Sorry, oh, what? Wow. 30 seconds?
And then Tom starts saying, I should have defended our home. I should have stood up to him. And the police say, oh no, this burglar was definitely somebody who was addicted to a substance.
Oh.
Because was it chess?
Was it? Okay. He was not addicted to board games.
We left the dizzying heights of Oxford behind now.
No, we're in Camden now.
I beg your pardon.
There's no chess name.
Yeah, exactly. In Oxford, that is chess. The street name for smack. It's chess.
Oh my God, I want some backgammon right now. Oh!
Your move.
the police officer says, no, no, no. The evidence that he was strong enough to open a window that was locked.
Right.
Which you get extra strength, apparently, from...
Oh, when you're desperate for crack.
Heroin.
Oh, it
heroin
sounds great.
Heroin.
There's all sorts of things I can't lift.
And also, they said the main thing is his face. He allowed his face to be seen. Because not only did I see his face...
Yeah.
He opened the door. They said a real burglar, a professional burglar...
Yeah.
Cannot have their face seen because that's their career over. Wow. It's the opposite of our career, gang.
Where we want our face on every Edinburgh Festival street corner.
That's right. Faces are all darlings. But for a burglar, the opposite. Sure. And when I get a little bit older, that's the way I'm going to go. So if your face is seen and then you're on a list, it's much more difficult for you to continue your career and advance in it. And it's even harder for a woman. Don't ask me why. It just is. We know. So few female burglars, and when they are female burglars, they're referred to as female burglars. And they hate it. Burglarettes.
Outrageous.
Burglarends.
You think that I'll be equal under the balaclavas, but...
No.
Nope.
So they said, no, he was someone who was taking risks. Normally they just take the TV.
Nobody crouches by a futon. Like, you're not going to get lower than
crouching.
That.
Crouching.
Nice try.
And then it turned out he left that room with nothing because he dropped the cosmetics case because I told him to. He was fearful of me when he thought, I'm not coming between a woman and her makeup. I may be very high on a substance and absolutely desperate for my next hit. And... doing over this whole street. He'd done over the whole street.
Wow.
Because it was bank holiday weekend and lots of people had gone away.
Wow.
But I will not come between a woman and her Max Factor. Yeah. And I said to Tom, look, we can get another television, but I don't want a violent altercation in my house.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just don't, I kind of don't want that. We went away for the week. We were going away for the weekend, like the cliche that he thought we were. But we went away that day, and I remember sleeping with the lights on and coming back and like being really like,
you feel so violated.
It makes you shaky for ages.
Yeah, 100%. You don't feel safe.
But then, not long after, I'm walking down Camden High Street, got my handbag, and I've got a little cosmetics case just peeping out, a little gold cosmetics case, and a man mugs me for it. Do you know why? He thinks it's like a wallet or something.
Yeah.
And again, I see my makeup being taken from me and I will not stand for it.
Oh, did you
second
just...
time I protected my makeup. I'm a feminist, but I protected my makeup, and this is what you should not do, listeners. You should not do. I lunged towards the man, screaming, and said, drop my makeup. And he did, and he ran.
Oh my God, brilliant.
Yes.
And then finally, the fourth time, also in Camden, this is not long ago, I'm walking home. I use my iPhone on the high street. I come off the high street into my street in Camden, which is a bit of a leafy side street. And a man has clearly, at this point... have been following me. Because suddenly I feel this bag, my bag being tugged behind me, and he's trying to grab it. And in it is
some
my
makeup.
Laptop.
Oh,
no,
okay.
No.
I was going to say.
There probably is a lipstick, but that's not what I'm worried about.
Okay.
I've just been writing a screenplay, which I'm being commissioned to write.
Yay.
Now, to him, he gets 100 quid at a pawnbroker for a laptop. But I can't write
that
this.
Work back.
Oh, I can't write this whole screenplay again. I can't. Mm. It takes so long to write it. And I've been commissioned... and I'm being paid for it.
Yeah.
And I can't give the advance back. And I can't, like, I'm just like, okay. And my instinct, again, you should not do this. Because you could have had a knife or anything. But I will not let go of it because I'm aware what's in it. And I turn around and I lunge towards him and I scream.
Yes.
Wow.
And he's this kid, you know? And I just looked at him and he's got a hoodie on and he's a kid. And I just felt for him so much. Because I was just like, your brother or someone's told you how to nick iPhones. If you had better opportunities than this, you would not be doing it.
Mm.
So I really wanted to chase after him. So I scream at him and he starts running and I go, yeah, you better run. But I can
towards a better future if you just listen to...
And I want to run after him and trip him up and offer to retrain him. Because I felt so bad for him. Because I was like, you are doing this. You don't want to be doing this. You're terrified of me.
No one's first choice.
Yeah. It's no one's first choice. And you have to remember that. If someone burgles your home or grabs your bag, As angry as you might feel and as violated as you might feel, it's not their first choice.
Mm. What would you say now if you had the perp in the room, but you have multiple perps and you actually shouted at some of them? So the ones that got away, would you say anything to them? Or you want to tell that kid to get training?
Okay, the chess players can fuck the fuck off. they were sort of proactively doing over houses, and I have a feeling that...
They were doing it jauntily too. That was their first choice.
I feel it was their first choice, yeah. I mean, I'm sure not their first choice, but they had probably had other choices. Yeah.
It's kind of sarcastic as well. Yeah. To be like, not only did I burgle your house, but I was in here for like 40 to 60 minutes.
Also, it was 100% Boris Johnson.
Or Jacob Rees-Mogg taking the pick.
Yeah.
The second one, that guy, I think he was very heavily addicted to something. And again, I would say... I'm such a bleeding heart liberal.
But he needs a program.
I would say he needs a program. He needs help. He didn't hurt us, and he could have. Yeah. And I feel like
he
dropped the makeup. And for that, I will always be thankful. If you are listening, burglar, you know what you saw, and you know. Presumably, he lives. He probably loves a lot of true crime podcasts.
He's our target audience, really.
Yeah. The guy who mugged me in the street, was such a flash in the pan. Mm. But the last guy. The little guy in the hoodie.
Yeah.
I'm like, if wherever you are, I would love to give you some training. And I think, you know what? You're brave and you could be doing some corporate training or something like that. And I would help you.
We'll get in touch.
So any criminals listening, if you were young enough, we can retrain. Deborah can retrain you.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
All right. Listen up, knuckleheads. We've got a case to crack. I'm going to give you some facts. The year is 1868.
Ooh.
A woman takes a man to court. Question, why do we think a woman would be taking a man to court in 1868?
He's a bad landlord.
Ooh.
And he's let her roof leak. I know this because Amelia Lanya did this. She was Jacobean at this point, early 1600s. But she would always be taking men to court because they weren't keeping up the property.
Interesting.
She had a school. And there's a play about her on in the West End at the moment called Amelia.
Oh, we just booked tickets. Yeah,
it's genuinely amazing. So I would say it's something like that. He has, he's a bad employer, or he's a bad landlord, or he's a bad husband.
Okay.
He sold her some faulty something.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Any advice?
I just don't see how a man could do anything terrible to a woman in the 1800s.
Okay, Vee, do you know what? And really good point.
Thank you.
And really awesome guesses. They are not correct.
What? Wow, Deborah's just stormed out. That's weird.
But really, really interesting, though. She is actually suing him. Mm. And it's not for bad landlording. Any other reasons why we think she could be suing him?
He's plagiarized her work.
Yes.
Whoa! No!
That is
ding, 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 ding,
well,
jackpot.
Like, this woman's name is Margaret Eloise Knight, and she has filed a patent interference lawsuit.
Mm.
So she is saying that he has stolen her invention.
Excellent. Oh, yes. What has she invented? Is it a vibrator? Please make it be a vibrator.
You know what? It's not, but I...
But you could use it as a vibrator, which is true for most things, if you just shake it around enough.
That's true.
Wait, I thought you said she was a writer.
So no. Well,
doing things with books that you should.
Or paper
do.
Cuts.
I didn't mean to mislead you. Yeah, because it was theft of intellectual thing, but you know,
property.
Yes, but kind of, but yes. So
we're real detectives.
Right, this woman is Margaret Knight. So at the time, she is 30 years old. She's taking a man called Charles Annan to court for a patent that she says is rightfully hers.
She invented the knighthood.
Eh?
She invented the knighthood, Margaret Knight. She invented the concept of night. She invented deadly nightshade.
I mean, do you know what? I cannot disprove that.
She invented a nightlight.
No, I will. We'll get to that.
Sorry. I've come too quickly.
Oh, well, you've jumped to my next question. So I was going to say, what do you think she invented? And you think deadly nightshade.
I've heard this podcast before. I knew what the next question was and I anticipated it brilliantly. No, I'm saying she invented the knighthood.
Obviously, I know that's not true.
Yeah.
Older. She invented the concept of night. Obviously, older. And she invented the night light or deadly nightshade.
Okay.
I don't really think those things. I was just trying to be clever.
I think she invented M. Night Shyamalan.
Sorry, do we know where this is?
Do you know what? I wasn't going to make you guess that, so I'll just tell you it is America.
Yeah, oh, she's okay. Suing someone, Taylor.
It's 1868.
Of course she's fucking America.
I really want to get this. I feel really competitive all of a sudden. Let's do this.
Okay. Okay. Hints.
Is it something to do with industry? Like it's going to help with a factory process?
Yeah.
Like it's an extruder or it's a slicer or it's going to help you
mass produce. Ooh, a vent.
Shall I just tell you guys?
Yes, please.
So it is the patent for a machine that makes brown paper bags.
I think it was going to take us a long time to guess that.
That could not be less exciting.
You're going to eat those words.
Oh, shit, okay.
Well, we can't
masturbate with that. Can we?
It's good if you're having like a kind of like panic attack. It's great to masturbate with.
You can keep wanking. No, all right, this is it, right? Let me just get you up to speed with paper bags, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
So... Right, it's 1868. Mm-hmm. There were no brown paper bags at this time. Well, there were, but there were no good brown paper bags at this time. There were basically three options. Number one, shops sometimes wraps goods up in a paper cone, like chips, but it was bad, it was messy, stuff fell out.
Yeah.
Number two, there was an envelope type of paper bag, which could be mass produced, so it was still sort of cheap, but it was a similar problem. The bottom was glued in a V-shape, and it had gusseted sides that expanded, which limited what each bag could hold, and stuff fell out.
This is all facts that hold true for the first bras.
Option number three, you could have handmade paper bags that could hold stuff. They were expensive because they were handmade. They were still a slightly weird shape. Stuff fell out. There was actually an extra option. Option number four, string bags. Expensive. And for all we know, stuff fell out. So, this is a huge problem.
I've never had that problem. Nothing has ever fallen out.
I love
out
that
bra.
Your flat chest has become like a running...
It has. It's a running theme in this podcast. It's kind of weird.
I never would have known, but now I know.
So everyone's up to speed with Victorian paper bags.
Interesting.
So she invents square bottomed brown paper bags. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I need to tell you how much better that is. It's a much more useful shape, but it's harder to mass produce. It takes a genius type of mind to invent something like that. So Margaret goes to patent her invention in 1868, only to discover that a patent for that machine has already been awarded to a Mr. Charles Annan. She is shocked and appalled.
Fucking Chuck. Uh-huh. Always stealing her.
Steely Chuck, they call
glory.
Him. Yeah, she alleges that he stole her idea and it goes to court. So we're going to go into more detail.
Where are we? What state? Where are we? I must know.
We're in a few different states, which I will get to.
Mm-hmm. The bag belt. The bag belt of the US.
She is from New York, but I think some of this is in Boston by the time she's trying to do this. But basically, when this first happens and she alleges that he did this... What do we think that Charles Annan's defense was? Have a guess. You're not going to like it.
I came up with the idea at the same time. It was just simultaneous. It's like comedy. We just came up with the same idea.
I came up with the idea and you stole it from me.
Ooh.
Uh-huh. And we were dating at the time and I told you about it.
Ooh.
And you know that. And you know that you did, Maggie. You know that you did.
Oh, gaslighting. Gaslighting.
You're too good at this game.
And I woke up and you were crouched by my futon holding
any advice, Hannah George?
Well, I think I'm with Deborah, yeah. I think that he gaslighted her. Yeah.
Okay. His defense is even better than that. He, in court, he said, no woman could ever design such an innovative machine. It was utterly impossible. That was his defense.
Right.
Fucking hell, man.
So we like in Charles. I hope he wins the court case.
You don't understand square bottoms. I know that's not how he speaks, but no, it does in my head.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It is. So my questions to you, plural, okay. Number one, based on the information so far, who do you think is telling the truth about inventing this? But question number two, who do you think wins?
The woman is telling the truth and the man wins. And do you know how I know that? I've lived in the world for some time. Do you know, all my life, actually. Don't want to brag, I've lived in the world. And I've seen some things, and so therefore I'm going to go down to Ladbrokes right now and put all my life savings on she's right, he wins.
Okay. I have further questions, Your Honour.
Okay.
Well, I sort of like, I mean, so she went to put a patent on it and there was already a patent there. So he'd already done that, which suggests to me they knew each other before.
Because they obviously knew each other before.
Yeah. So
and he said, her pretty little head couldn't possibly come up with anything that was mechanical.
Mm-hmm. Oh, do you think maybe they were a thing and they invented the bag
together? Either a thing
together,
or friends or brother and sister or, you know, neighbours.
I'm loving this.
She was
guessing.
His employee. She was his employee. She made, you know, it happened a lot that enslaved people who were African American came up with patents and their... the white people who had enslaved them took the patents because they figured...
No one's going to believe.
Yeah, they figured they were the rightful owners of them.
Oh, God.
And so a lot of the early patents, and I found this out when I was researching my book, Sunday Times bestseller, stop going on about it.
There's no need. There's no need. I've asked you to stop. It's embarrassing.
These people listening to this will be like, oh, they must have edited out when Katie was...
So, but yeah, no, yeah.
I'm going to go against the grain with a bit of like, sometimes history surprises us. I mean, very rarely.
Does it, Taylor?
Very rarely.
Does it surprise
us? Come on!
Okay, so you think she wins?
I don't.
Okay, I'm going to give
maybe
you...
Maybe she does. Listen, maybe that's why you're talking about it. Because this is the one time in the 1800s a woman won.
But like, just based on... Because obviously I'm going to leak further information to you now. Yeah. So you can change your guesses.
I'm on a Maggie Wash history.
I just thought off the bat, what do we feel? Which way do we feel it's going? I just wanted to test the water and we can change. So I'm going to give you a bit about Margaret's background.
Please do.
She was born in 1838 in New York, and she certainly does have previous as an inventor. She gets...
I'm glad you said as an inventor. Okay.
She gets described as a tomboy. She always loved tinkering and making toys for her brothers and sisters. Apparently her kites and sleds were the envy of all the neighbourhood kids.
Oh, yeah.
Then tragedy strikes.
No,
her dad dies. Oh, and the family, when she's about 10, the family have to move to New Hampshire, where Margaret and her siblings become part of the child labour force that powered New England's fabled textile mills. Oh, yay!
The past was such good times. Right? I mean, history is awesome.
But, you know, we should turn our frowns upside down, because if we didn't have child labour, we might not have a paper bag invention.
No!
It's all great, right? So she starts work age 10 in this cotton mill, and then something happens there when she's aged 12. Question, what do we think that is?
She gets a promotion, or she gets adopted into a family.
Ooh, okay. I like it. Any advance on that?
Does she have an accident?
Very close.
Okay.
She dies. She's resurrected as a ghost. The paper bag ghost.
I was so distracted during that because I was thinking about my nana worked in a mill.
Oh.
And for years, I thought she worked in a windmill. And I just thought it was amazing. I can imagine. Literally, I just thought, it's Nana. She was in a windmill like Jonathan Creek.
They're on the stair going click, clickety, click on the stair.
And then my mum explained to me, no, I think it was a cotton mill. It was in Yorkshire in like the 1920s. I literally thought she was in like a fucking windmill. That's actually very triggering, Katie. Sorry, what was the question?
Okay, so the question
close to an accident? Asthma? Okay, she's asthma.
So when she's 12, she witnesses an accident in the mill.
Is it Jonathan Creek?
Yes.
No.
Someone has a pointy-bottomed bag. Okay.
She witnesses an accident and invents a machine to stop the accident happening again.
Oh! Ding, 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 ding.
Yes! That's amazing.
Deborah Francis White, you are promoted.
Yeah.
That is a very astute.
So I'm a good feminist, but I am feeling pretty smug about beating all the other drunk women. To
the I'm like, my nanny cheers. Used to work there. Like,
yeah. I have an anecdote that won't help us.
That wasn't even about you. That was about myself. I'm sorry. I loved the windmill. I love it.
Sorry, Kate, to continue before this gets too...
Okay, so she saw a steel-tipped shuttle fly off a power loom at high speed, causing grievous injury to another worker.
Oh, we can't have that. That's
not funny. And this gave her a great idea. And unlike most of her other cases, the idea was not that she liked to see people in pain.
Attach the shuttlecock to something. It's not a shuttlecock.
Yeah, so her first invention, as Deborah has correctly guessed, it was a shuttle restraint that kept shuttles from flying off the loom whenever a thread broke. So it's basically a device that would automatically stop a machine if something got caught in it.
That's amazing.
So the mill owner installed her auto stop guards on all of his looms, and Knight was still in her teens when her invention swept the cotton industry. Question, do we think she thought to patent this idea?
No,
she did not.
She was a child.
She was 13, 14, 12.
As if, yeah. 12, as if she knew. Oh, I don't know, I'll go and patent and protect myself.
So she never saw a penny for it. Jump forward in time. She's in her 20s. We're going to get to the Columbia Bag Paper Company in Springfield, MA. Which state is MA?
Massachusetts!
So in her 20s, Margaret started work at the Massachusetts Columbia Paper Bag Company. She was one of the people making the bags by hand for $1.50 to $3.50 a week. Whoa. Working 10-hour days.
Oh, I thought you were going to say per bag. I'm like, that's not bad. That's all right.
This was mind-numbing, repetitive work. And these were the bags that would be the envelope style with the bottoms glued together in the V shape. I don't need to tell you guys this. Paper bag fans might be thinking, but what type of bag
was fans? We don't want to leave out the paper
bags. Paper bags are coming back because of recycling. Plastics out, gang. You know what? Maggie's invention is so on the way back. It's so on trend 2020.
Yeah. Well done, Maggie.
Oh, if any of her descendants are out there. You're going to get a sweet payout, right?
Well, possibly. We don't know who won!
Yeah. Stay tuned, listeners.
Keep the jeopardy.
Go, Knight family.
So...
Jordan Knight from Kids on the Block. He's a descendant. Seriously, they're from Boston. Right. I guarantee. Same family.
So, as we have discussed, this job was stupefyingly boring and repetitive. So, while she was working, Margaret Knight was thinking how much more useful paper bags would be if the bottoms were flat. Fans of paper bags will know that if you had to make a flat bottomed bag without a machine that did it mass produced, it's very labor intensive. You'd have to fold and glue the seams that go inside the flat bottom bag, known in the paper bag industry as a satchel bottom bag.
Flat bottom girls can make the rocking world go round.
Okay.
We all had the same idea, but none of us had the same lyrics.
You know. All the same tune.
Okay, so Knight's inventor brain kicked into high gear with an idea for a machine that could cut, fold, and glue all those seams together with the turn of a crank to produce paper bags that would be the forerunners of the flat bottom bags found everywhere today, from McDonald's drive-through window to your local market. I say your local, Taylor's local market in America. Where they have the paper bags until
market.
They all come to England when
My
we all recycle. So Walmart. Within a month, she had a sketch of one. And within half a year, she had a working wooden model that would cut, fold and glue the bags together with the turn of a crank. Though That's rickety, fair. As described by a witness later in court, it pumped out more than 1,000 bags.
Wow, but over what kind of time?
I'm not sure.
1,000 bags practice. Every 10 years is not a lot.
Over sometime.
Okay.
I'm going to say a day.
A day. That's
kind
of good.
I'm going to say 10,000 bags a day. Why would you say 10,000 bags otherwise? It's not going to be an hour. It's the 1800s. It's going to be a day.
Okay. So.
Oh, this woman's brain. Imagine if she had just had... Oh, this frustrates
a
me.
A penis? What?
That's basically what she says at the end of her life. Anyway, we'll get to that.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say an education, but... And opportunities and opportunity,
yeah.
Whatever it takes to get
there. Okay. Yeah. So Knight is older and wiser. She decides she's going to patent this invention this time. She doesn't want to get screwed over like those cotton bastards did.
Yeah.
So she makes this wooden prototype of her design, but she couldn't patent that because there were quite strict rules about how to patent something, and the patent office required something else. Question, what did the patent office require?
Sorry, what did she have? And
so she has a wooden prototype of her design, but that is not admissible to a patent office because they need something specific. What do you think
they need? They need an actual prototype of her design? Or they need evidence that no one else has invented this?
They need an iron prototype for some reason.
Oh, wow. So it was the wood. The wood was the problem.
Yeah. So she couldn't submit a wooden one. She had to have an iron one.
An iron paper bag.
Well, an iron machine that would make the paper bag. So she's got a wooden machine that makes the paper bags by turning it.
She couldn't afford an iron one, but she needed an iron one.
That is really
specific.
So she's made the wooden one herself, but she can't make the iron one herself. So she needs help to make the iron one.
I know who she goes to.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
My name's Chuck, and she goes to access. This,
she goes to Charlie.
Well,
I get access.
She goes to a machine shop for fabrication in Boston, and that is where she meets Charles Annan.
Oh.
But he doesn't work at the machine shop. No. He was just in the machine shop. So,
what, just hanging about in a machine
shop? Well, kind of.
Loitering around, like a customer.
It was actually weirdly hard to find out that much about him too. So, work proceeds at the machine shop, and he's another machinist, according to some versions of this. But he's not working on this.
I tried to be subtle. But
Henna, we
need a drink.
She's just adding those alcohol pouring sound effects to make it sound like drunk woman solving crime. She's really pouring water onto a bat. But it's not wine into a glass at all.
To the windmill.
A little master.
Charles Annan stopped by to examine the proceedings with Knight's permission, and he expressed interest in her designs. He stopped by often, too often.
Too often, Charles.
Yeah.
And he stopped by this Mr. Abbott's shop, and he told Mr. Abbott that he wasn't planning to make a machine of his own. He was just curious about how it worked.
Oh, when they're curious about your ideas in a meeting, do you know what they're going to do? Steal your ideas.
Yes, they are.
And then suddenly you see your television show with a male star, not a female star, on Netflix, and you're like, I'm sure I pitched that, and oh, what, that producer was in the room. I am not specifically talking about any situation here.
No,
it wasn't Netflix, and that's why I said Netflix. It could have, it was everything but Netflix.
Hey, tell us after. And then I think we've all been in this situation funnily. So that's great, but it needs a man in it.
We already have a female-driven project this year on this channel.
We've done one in 10 years. We're clocked. Yeah,
there's no need for shows about women.
Do you not remember Smack the Pony? Guys.
Yeah, we've kind of covered that.
As we know, when Knight eventually filed for her patent, she was taken aback when her application was rejected on the grounds that a patent for the same machine had already been awarded to one Charles Annan. So Knight simply wasn't having it. Goes to court. She's absolutely cash-strapped because she works in a factory for, like, no money. So he has to pay $100 a day to hire a patent attorney to prove that she was the machine's true inventor.
We've all been there.
So, as I mentioned before, Charles said that she couldn't have invented it because no woman could ever design such an innovative machine. It was utterly impossible.
Oh, God. I mean, not that I didn't believe that he, you know, that she definitely invented it in the first place. Yeah. But the more you hear, not, you're like...
And also, the more I couldn't invent this machine, which I totally fucking couldn't, the more I'm angry that someone thinks a woman couldn't. Even though no woman in this room could. It's still annoying. Yeah. It's still annoying.
Yeah. Annan's lawyer, Charles Annan's lawyer, actually argued in court that an uneducated, self-taught woman could never have built such a sophisticated machine. Mm. So Knight had to gather her evidence to prove that she was the true inventor. Question, do we think she has good evidence?
Yeah, of course she does. Yeah. She was right.
Yeah. Correct.
She'd have her little her sketches and the...
Yeah. So she reproduced, this is the list of stuff, she reproduced witnesses from New Hampshire and Massachusetts to attest to her machine
skills. It's about time she got reproducing. She's a woman.
Right. The bag factory boss bolstered her claim, testifying that the idea for a machine to make flat-bottom bags came from a conversation between him and her, and further that he had no doubt whatsoever that it was her idea.
Wow.
The mechanic who fabricated the patent prototype swore that he made it from her original wooden design. Through the process that she'd been through, three machine shops...
She's going to win!
And she
had... She's actually going to win, and that's why we call brown bags Maggie's. We don't call them Charlie,
as we call them, optimism.
You're going to be so sad if she doesn't win.
She had witnesses from each of the three machine shops testifying her vision and careful instruction. No. She had several years worth of drawings and plans.
Oh, God.
And Eliza McFarland, with whom Knight would live for over 40 years, we need to come back to this, recalled watching her make one drawing after another of her machine, always tweaking and improving the same design. And finally, Knight produced all manner of papers and models documenting her design process, including entries from personal diaries, which she refused to read aloud.
Okay, there's a swear word in my house. It's more of an ejaculation than a swear word. And by ejaculation, I do mean the inadvertent use of the word. I don't mean spunking up a wall. I mean, and it's Yikes McFarlane.
Okay.
And I feel the fact that someone is called McFarlane or McFarland in this tells me that things did not go her way. She had all of this evidence. Oh. And if she had all of this evidence and she won, you wouldn't be telling us about it. Mm. It would just be like, yeah, she had all this evidence and she won. She lost. Oh. She had all this evidence and she lost. And no one would be happier than me if she won. No one.
Well, we will continue. That is her hard evidence versus basically women ain't shit.
Literally, he just like saw it a couple of times.
Yeah.
And then said, oh, a woman couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
A woman couldn't, so therefore she didn't.
Yeah.
And do you think in his heart he thought she must have stolen it from some man because a woman couldn't do it? He was such a misogynist. He believed she'd stolen it, so it was fine for him to steal it from her.
Yeah.
It's really hard to work out where misogyny ends and economics begins, because it's like there's a... There's a real gambling... He's gambling that no one's going to believe her, isn't he? He's like, he's rolling those dice.
I think she wins and they change patent law.
Oh,
okay.
I love your optimism.
So we basically,
right.
We've
I'll
got,
so
she's got shitloads of evidence versus women ain't shit. How long do you think the trial went on for?
Ooh. 4 years.
6 months.
3 days.
16 days of testimony.
Oh, you were closest.
Do we think that Charles Annan updated his claims at any point?
Yes.
Yes.
Came up with new evidence that show. Hey, look at this drawing.
I'm going to say no. He thought women ain't shit was enough.
Hannah, do you think he changed it? Do you think he updated anything?
I don't know. Yeah, I feel like maybe he wasn't scared because he just thought, yeah, you're right. It was enough.
Basically, he's got women are dumb bitches. They can't invent stuff. And then she's got all this proof and he's slightly on the ropes. So he then goes that his modifications, which let's face it, are presumably changes introduced because he could not perfectly remember the details of her model, made his a different machine.
So he's patenting for something else, is what he said.
Yeah, he's claiming...
It's significantly different.
Well, this is it. If she wasn't allowed a patent, I can't imagine that it's different enough. But it's just... I really feel like when I was researching this case, I found that almost as annoying as the fact that he'd been such a cunt in the first place. Because it's like when women say stuff in a meeting room and they don't say it... like loudly enough, and then a man repeats it and everyone goes, oh yeah, great idea. But like,
did they not say it loud enough, or was she just absolutely
ignored? And then, but I feel like this is an example of that, but then someone's going, oh mate, she just said that, like, so he's actually been called out, you know? It's like,
yeah, that's why he changed his,
and then he's like, oh, it's just different enough. Like, Beth, I'm gonna give you guys a chance to make one final choice. Do you think Margaret Knight won?
Yeah. No.
You think no? You think yes?
No, I know the history of the world.
I think the history of the world.
And I know why you're asking me. Because no, she didn't.
She's Hillary.
I can now reveal.
Oh my god. I really hope she did. I hope she did. Okay, I hope I'm wrong.
You're going to be like, and I'm going to be so disappointed.
Okay. Margaret Knight won.
That was the first time we've all hugged in a podcast recording.
Such a celebration.
She's
it's like we've just got the vote, listeners.
You know what?
Do you know what? Your cynicism is justified because she actually sort of got told off in the courtroom. That in the end, the Commissioner of Patents found in favour of Knight, though officials could not resist chastising her for waiting so long to apply for her patent. However, since Knight was not a man of business, this oversight was forgiven.
No!
Oh my God!
Yeah.
Forgiven
for not being a man. How could you know? You're only a lady girl.
I feel like Maggie the Musical is coming
up. I think I'm going to do the Guilty Feminist Drunk because I never drink before work. I have a real policy. Some comedians enjoy a beer and they think, oh, it listens me up. I'm like, no, I have to be faster than the audience. It's ideal if they've had a drink and I haven't. And if they have two, I can have one. But I can't guarantee that, so I never had a drink before work. But this experience has shown me a slippery slope towards a spiral of alcoholism.
That's all we aim for.
Margaret Knight won her court case and in 1869 filed the necessary paperwork in the Patent Office. 2 years later, on July 11th, 1871, she received patent number 116,842 for her bag machine. And her invention revolutionized the paper industry.
Nothing like a patent to make you feel special.
You'll be happy to know that Queen Victoria decorated Margaret Knight in 1871.
Wow. Okay.
You fucking
serious?
Yeah, I mean, it was her invention was a really big deal, and her court case was
British
big.
British people love the paperback.
Yeah.
How did they buy all their penny sweets?
Well, quite. So, armed with her newly minted patent, Knight moved to Connecticut, where she started her own company, the Eastern Paper Bag Company. Her machine made square bottom bags quickly. The machine that made the bags became staples of local grocery stores and large well-known department stores such as Macy's. Throughout her life, Knight was awarded more than 20 patents for almost 100 different inventions.
Wow.
She created a machine cobblers used to cut the soles of shoes, a sewing machine reel, a prolonged barbecue spit for cooking meat, a paper feeding machine, a numbering mechanism, a dress and a skirt protector, a clasp to keep robes modestly closed, and even devices for rotary engines.
I'm sorry, what was that one?
She invented devices for rotary engines when she developed an interest in automobiles later in life. At age 70, she was still working 20 hours a day on new inventions. At the time of her death in 1919, an obituary described the 76-year-old Margaret Knight as a woman Edison, yet she died leaving an estate valued at only at $275, the equivalent of $7,000 today, because woman Edison ain't paid properly.
Wow.
Later in life, Knight did bemoan, "I'm only sorry I couldn't have had as good a chance as a boy and have been put to my trade regularly." The wow. end.
Yeah. Yes, Maggie.
Drunk women solving crime.
Right, we have just enough time to deal with a listener crime somebody has written in with.
Excellent.
Now, I believe that this was one that we acquired from one of our live shows. Mm. So it is anonymous. It was on a piece of paper. It is a short crime. It says, "Someone left a marrow and green beans in the shape of a phallus on my doorstep. Who done it?"
Ooh.
Sorry. What's a marrow again?
Like
a vegetable, root vegetable.
It's like a courgette, but bigger.
Oh, so it, okay. It's long.
I was at Oxford, not to go back to that, but somebody put in my pigeonhole, not a euphemism, a chocolate finger in an envelope, like a chocolate finger biscuit.
What?
Okay. And I think they were sending me the finger. I'm just going to say that.
But so you just patented it.
I have failed to patent.
They just made you
finger.
Money.
And I'm going to suggest that this person is giving you the finger. So who? So you have to look around.
Okay.
I don't know who in your community wants you dead or at least insulted, but it's that person. So someone you screwed over, it's probably the ex of the person you're seeing.
Okay. So with that in mind, is that who you think sent you the finger?
No, I don't know who sent me the finger, but I'm pretty sure they were sending me the finger.
Is it not somebody just saying, "Oh, that is a nice snack"?
No,
I'd have eaten that shit
in the shape of a phallus.
Wait, no, I mean you. If somebody sent me
one
like,
chocolate finger,
a chocolate finger,
a box of chocolate fingers is a present. One chocolate finger is in an envelope is an insult.
No, I would have
sending
eaten it.
You, the fucking
you would have eaten.
Oh, 100%. Nom 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 nom. "Dear Deborah, I've poisoned the chocolate finger."
There was no note with that, and I checked that before I ate the chocolate finger. But I was like, "It's a chocolate finger." I had a cup of coffee
can't
in my hand.
Can't do this with a marrow and whatever. The
well,
other thing
I
is.
Mean, that is a good question, though. Did this person eat the marrow? Yeah, someone left a marrow and green beans in the shape of a phallus on my doorstep.
You
Who
know,
done it?
Boys usually do that just because they like you.
Can you not please project the psych? You don't project on girls like, "Oh, if a boy pulls your hair, he likes you. He's hurting you and abusing you, and you must not put that out there." No, they didn't do it because they like you. They're insulting you.
That's why I was joking
They're hurting
about
you.
It.
Well, Taylor, It's not a subject for comedy, even if you're this drunk.
Okay. Also, we don't know the gender of the person that this happened to. This could be a boy or a girl.
Also, what is it? We don't know the sexual orientation or the sexual orientation of the perpetrator or the victim.
We know they have a doorstep. And they,
gives a lot of information about their sexual orientation or their gender.
It's a marrow and what?
Green beans.
Green beans?
You know, when I first read it, I thought they made a pattern, but I think it's two green beans.
Testicles. I don't understand this.
Green beans do not replicate testicles.
No.
I think it's got to be a bunch of green beans in the shape of a testicle.
It could be.
They misread this signal. They have completely misread this vegetable signal. That means, like, do you want to hang out?
Is this a crime? I feel like it could be an offering.
Was it like a cardo? Did they order they ordered some marrows
like
and green beans?
Abel and Cole,
you know what? It could imagine that, right? You know, like when people see like the face of Jesus on a crisp or something. It could just be some marrow, and he's like, "Oh my god, it looks like a cock and balls," because he or she is like, sees penises everywhere.
Make a sauce, cook it up, get over yourself. There are women who have been fighting for patents, and you're worried about vegetables.
I'm going to suggest you change the locks. Mm-hmm. And
you think there's a level of threat here?
Yes. I just think anytime you get an unsolicited dick pic, even if it's metaphorical, you need to change those locks.
Okay. See, I think it's kids messing around. It's like if you have brothers or sisters or friends that live nearby, I think someone's just messing around.
I don't know how many kids are like, let's get a fucking marrow and fuck some shit up.
Well, it could be in the countryside. There could be marrows for days.
I grew up in the countryside, darling. In the countryside, children have less to do and they're... I'm parodying. Okay. Please don't write it if you're from the countryside. This is a parody. I'm satirizing.
The worst thing that has been done with a marrow is marrow jam has been made, which is fucking disgusting.
That's very crime. Sure that's the worst thing that's been done with a marrow.
Okay. I think
we're
the countryside thing, because we did something called corning, which is just throw corn at people's houses like that. So we did in the country. Okay.
All right, so listener, just be glad they weren't throwing it at your house like corning.
Mm-hmm. This is abuse, and you don't say just be glad you weren't abused more.
We say all kinds of inappropriate things, Deborah. We're a drunk podcast.
We're done.
I feel like that's as good a place as any to go. We solved it!
We solved it.
Hooray! Oh, Deborah, what would you like to plug? What are you up to?
We are doing a Guilty Feminist tour around the country to big theatres.
Awesome.
It's going to be an extravaganza. Every episode, there's going to be stand-up comics. There's going to be music.
Wow.
It's like feminist variety. It's going to be great. We're coming to a town near you. Also, my book is out in paperback right now. It's just come out.
Awesome.
And so you can buy that if you were like holding off, because, you know, the paperback, let's be clear, is expensive and unwieldy. And also my movie, Say My Name, is out at checkguiltyfeminist.com, and you will see live shows coming up, recorded podcasts coming up. We're doing the Secret Policeman's Tour in 2019. We will be at the Hackney Empire in June, the Edinburgh Festival in August. And we will be somewhere else in the country towards the end of the year. So again, check guiltyfeminist.com or the Amnesty website for the Secret Policeman's Tour.
Cool.
Amazing.
Thank you. Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman. Music by The Lion and the Wolf. If you would like to, you can follow us on Drunk Women Pod on Twitter, on Facebook and Insta. We are Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. And also, if you have a crime that you would like us to solve, write it on a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Thank you to Acast, and thank you for listening. Bye!
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.